Next item on agenda, number 9, report on findings of the Crab Management Advisory Committee. Mr. Travelstead.
Originally, we had intended this item to be to result in a request for public hearing with some proposals that you would hold a public hearing on in November and take some action. And now, upon further review, we're not quite ready to move that quickly on these issues. And having said that, there's still plenty of time to look at these issues with the fishery winding down now for the year, and won't pick up again on these issues until late spring. But nonetheless, I wanted to make you aware of two issues that the CRAB committee is looking at that I think are important. There's a lot of interest in, and just so you're not blindsided by them when they do come before the commission. The first has to do with our regulation that protects the dark-colored sponge crabs. Under VMRC regulation, once a female crab reaches the stage, she's within 2 or 3 days of releasing the sponge or the larvae that make up the sponge, she's protected from harvest. And the way that regulation actually reads is that if the sponge has turned a brown or black coloration, then it falls under the provisions of the regulation and is protected from harvest. Over the last year, there have been some field studies by Dr. Lipsius and his staff at VIMS that suggest that the process of culling through one's crab catch that's been harvested by crab pot results in a significant mortality of those sponges, perhaps not to the point always where the female crab herself dies, but that the larvae that make up the sponge, in fact, die. In some cases, however, even the female crab, according to Dr. Lipsius' work, even the female crab, after a period of a number of days, also dies. Well, that information obviously suggests that the regulation is not having the intended conservation effect that we had hoped for. And if that's the case, then staff would obviously favor eliminating that regulation as unnecessary. Now, it's always thought that regulation did have a conservation in effect, and that is entered into all of our calculations about how we conserve this resource. So if that regulation were to be eliminated, we would recommend that you replace it with other measures that do provide conservation of the resource.
How much does that regulation figure into the 15%?
It's not at all. That was there before.
Okay.
The 15% provision. So it's sort of part of the baseline. You mess with the baseline, you still have to make up for it down the road.
I understand.
And the CRAB committee has looked at this, and one thing we do know about the regulation, in areas where there is an abundance of dark-colored sponge crabs, most fishermen, not all, but most fishermen will tend to move away from that area with their pots instead of sitting there and having to cull through massive quantities of animals they can't keep. You know, it's just a waste of time and money for them to fish in those areas. One of those areas, we believe, is off Virginia Beach, extending from the mouth of the bay down to the North Carolina line and out to the three-mile limit, or the extent of state waters. And so the committee has recommended that if you do ultimately eliminate the regulation protecting the dark-colored sponge crabs, you replace that regulation with an addition of this area off Virginia Beach to the crab sanctuary, which will protect all the female crabs during the spawning season. And since no harvesting would be occurring in that area, you don't get this mortality that comes about as a result of capture. Now, having said all of that, the work that Dr. Lipsius has done has not been peer-reviewed and has not been published at this point, and there have been some concerns about the work and whether or not it's giving us a clear picture of the mortality that it suggests is occurring.
So there may be some other science that, in other words, it's in healthy debate.
It's in healthy debate, absolutely. And it may be Dr. Lipsius is going back and looking at that work. He's going to be providing us with a more thorough written description of exactly what he did in the field and what the results were, so that that can be evaluated. There may be a need for still more field study this summer. I don't want to say that definitively, because it may end up it's not necessary, but that is a possibility. But nonetheless, over the next 4 or 5 months, we hope to get this worked out for you to the point where we can bring you some recommendations.
I hope so, too.
There is clearly an interest on part of the industry to eliminate that regulation if the science says it's not necessary.
Well, and there's also some interest from a law enforcement perspective. Wearing the other hat, write a lot of summonses for that. But, you know, it leaves a lot of opportunity for subjectivity as far as the coloring is concerned and using a color chart and things like that. And I hate to tell you this, I'm red, gray, colorblind. Some people are black, brown, colorblind. Some people other things, other yellow. Once you start making differentiations, and I know our officers do a good job leaning toward, they've got to really be dark. I mean, we use that chart that Scott looks like a, you know, a spectrum or whatever that says yes, no, maybe, and everything else. But hopefully some good work will come out of there that we can come up with something that is, from a conservation equivalency perspective, that's workable. But I do applaud the fact that we're not just up and saying, yep, this is what we need to do. We're up and running with it because, once again, we're back to the best science doctrine.
The second issue is a request from the Potomac River Fisheries Commission that we consider raising size limits in the Potomac River the Virginia's Potomac River tributaries to equal what is in place for the main stem of the Potomac that commission has put in place. And Mr. Carpenter, who's the director of that organization, has come down on a couple of occasions and spoken to the CRAB committee and made a pretty convincing case for the size limits that they have in place in the main stem, and the fact that they appear to have resulted in an increase in harvest and an increase in the harvest of large, high-dollar crabs. Now, most of the fishermen in that river tend to have a market that is the basket market to the cities, which is, you know, brings higher money than when you're selling, you know, smaller crabs to a picking house. And so they've sort of, for their river, designed a series of rules dealing with size limits that accommodate those fishermen. And they're interested in seeing both Virginia and Maryland adopt those same kind of size limits for the tributaries that empty into the main stem. The CRAB committee was reluctant to move on this issue because there was no one sitting on the committee that fishes in those areas. And so they've asked staff to survey the crab fishermen, and we actually want to take it a one step further, and that is to hold a meeting next Monday up at the Potomac River Fisheries Commission office so that fishermen can provide direct comments as to whether or not they support this proposal. We've sent out invitations to all crabbers who have a history of fishing in those tributaries. And then we're also going to hand them a little survey when they come in the door, in case they don't want to speak publicly on the issue. They can check a box as to what they support, where they fish, what kind of licenses they hold, and what they support or don't support. And we'll bring that back to the CRAB committee when that's over with and let them debate the issue.
Okay. Job, Bernie.
Mr. Travel Stitt, I know last spring it was brought to the attention of the commission, and it was supposed to be forwarded to the CRAB committee, and I think it probably was, but with very little discussion. the possibility to have the season come in earlier?
Yes.
You know, that's very important to the Eastern Shore. The sponge issue is a Hampton Roads area issue, basically. But that's very important to the Eastern Shore and a lot of the other river areas where upriver the water warms quicker, because we have a problem on the Eastern Shore that there's been no market this summer. We got the whole Eastern Shore as a sanctuary area. So, you know, basically we've always had early market and late market, because during the prime production season they can get all the large crabs they want off Chesapeake Bay, which takes less and less every year to get all they want. So I like that considered.
Absolutely. It's still on their agenda. It is. It's been discussed briefly, I think, at a couple of meetings. There's clearly an interest in that topic, and it is one that will be on a future agenda of the committee and brought before you.
Thank you very much. And I'll twist the chair's arm to make sure that it's considered properly.
Unless there are any questions on that.
Just one comment, Jack. I think the approach for the PRFC proposal is a good one that you've come up with. I think that'll make a public information hearing will be the best forum, really, for letting that proposal be made and having the fishermen see the proposal in some detail and being able to comment on it rather than just being surveyed. So I think
we get a good turn.
I think that'll be a good way to handle that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. No other questions?
Move on to the striped bass.
Move on to the striped bass.
This is an issue, though, in which we will ask or are asking for a public hearing next month. It's a little bit different than we normally proceed. We typically, you know, for items where we're asking for a public hearing last month, we tend to gloss over them pretty quickly, but because we're asking in this case for some very significant changes in how we manage the striped bass fishery, we thought you should probably hear a little bit more detail this month before you make a decision whether you want to go to public hearing or not. We have met with our